Welcome again to the meditation session. Here, this is the ongoing class. Those who are coming for the introduction to meditation class, that is being held in the room on my right, just between here and the reception area when you first come in. So I always have to say that because sometimes it's a bit much to meditate for 45 minutes and not being given the basic instructions but more specialized instructions. And sometimes there's people come once and they go away and never to return because they went into the wrong class. So sometimes it's nice to have a bit of graded lessons so that the lessons, instructions which are appropriate to the audience. And interestingly, just beforehand, somebody was saying about just when, how do you know when somebody may be in a coma or close to death? How do you know just you know, whether it's really worthwhile resuscitating them or just letting them go? And because that question is right in the front of my mind right now, because it was just asked, it's amazing just how you can use your meditation to become more sensitive to even the people around you and really sort of get to know what is needed at that particular time. Because a lot of people, they panic, and when they panic, they think a lot, and they try and get advice from others what they should do, what they shouldn't do. And the story I mentioned was many years ago, when it was a doctor said he had a very great moral dilemma, that one of his patients had a cardiac arrest, and he just ran to the bedside and resuscitated this gentleman, but not before irreversible brain damage had happened. And so this gentleman was stuck, and he said could be for years in that state where he really couldn't communicate, and he was just there in the bed. You know, the quality of life, no one would actually say the quality of life was very high. And he felt so guilty, this doctor, that he'd like put this patient in a prison for so many years when the patient, he could have just let him go, so he died. So he said, well, what would I do the next time that happens? And that's where you can actually use some of the things which you learn in meditation, just to be able to still your mind. Not to panic, but to be still and feel what the answer is. To use, for want of a better word, the emotional intelligence, the ability to connect with somebody and just know what is needed. And it's amazing how many of you are able to do that if you can only trust what I call the wisdom born of silence. Because a lot of times in our meditation, that is what we are cultivating. We are cultivating the silent mind. So we're not thinking, we're not working it all out with theories. We're going deeper than that just so we could just know. And some of that knowing how it actually works, maybe there's many theories on that, but I do know so many examples when people are not particularly thinking about one problem and amazing solutions come up. They seem to just know what to do when they're coming from a place of silence. And just you know, some of the people which you know you get to know and see, the person who keeps coming up into my mind is this Nobel Prize laureate in Cambridge, Brian Josephson. And you know, he got his Nobel Prize, his big breakthrough in solid-state physics, in quantum tunneling, which was the reason why that they could have supercomputers. And he got that while he was meditating. So if you are, your mind begins to wander, don't stop it. You could have a Nobel Prize coming. No, that was after meditation, just when the meditation was finished. A nice deep meditation afterwards, you get these great understandings and insights. Where these insights come from? Where this knowledge comes from? I don't know, but certainly, if it comes to a critical situation or what you should do, sometimes thinking about it drives you crazy. But just stopping your thoughts and feeling the situation, feeling the way forward, feeling where to go next, that is very, very possible. And very effective too. So, you can only do that if you know how to trust in that silence of the mind. And so here in the meditation, we get our body nice and comfortable, as I say every week, make the mind really peaceful, and then even to go deeper into your meditation, to really just see what this meditation can do for you. Trust in that silence. And for goodness sake, don't start thinking, what did Ajahn Brahm say? What did this other teacher say? What did the Buddha say? Because you may remember what was said, but that's not the meaning of the words. We just have to be quiet and use, we call that wisdom born of silence, to feel our way through into the deep meditations, feel our way through into truth, into silence, into peace. Otherwise, we miss the opportunity. And so much of our life, we just are limited by everything we know. This is one of the sayings of all people. I remember just giving, the first time I gave this little aphorism, this little nice word of advice, was to a bunch of British soldiers who came to a temple. They were Buddhist, and I thought maybe they were just support parts of the British Army, like dental technicians or accountants. But no, these were actually frontline soldiers at the time fighting in Iraq. I said, what are they doing in a Buddhist temple? Well, okay, welcome. And then I told them, said, never allow the theory, or actually no, never allow your learning to stand in the way of truth. Just a little saying like that. The members are like, wow. And that really hit them. All the things which you've learned and been taught, all the things you've thought you've understood, sometimes that blocks the truth. This is what the books say. This is what the dogma says. This is what our training tells us to do. This is what, but stop. And feel your way through some of the really complicated moral dilemmas of life. Feel your way through into the deeper meditations, into the deeper truths of your own life. Not your learning, but something which is inherently there for you, your own truth. You feel it. So this is one of the things we can do to try to calm our very, very noisy mind. The reason is, I say this, is to try and take away some of the trust we have in finding solutions through thinking. Because often a problem comes up in our life, a solution has to be found, and we go thinking, thinking, thinking. And honestly, in your own experience, how many times has that really broken through the difficulties and find a really good solution? And how many times is it that when you just learn to be quiet, to be silent, you don't think your way to the answer, but the answer is seen in the silence? We have a simile which I always thought was a simile which I made up, like a lot of these things. You don't make these similes up. It's almost like they're out there and people share them. And this was when I did go, it's in the newsletter which will be posted out soon, some pictures of when I was last October in the DMZ of between North and South Korea, and one of the teachers there was saying the simile of the only real way you can have some wisdom is actually to find a lake which is perfectly still. And only when the lake is perfectly still, no waves or ripples or agitation on the surface at all, only then does it give a perfect, reliable, truthful image of the moon and the stars reflected in the stillness of its water. And so I love that simile, because it just shows that the more we think, the more we struggle and try to find an answer, the more that we create waves in our mind, which distorts the reflection of the truth. So, how many of you have gone into nature, into wilderness, into forests, and sometimes, if you're lucky, it's no wind at all. And the lakes up in the mountains are perfectly still. And if you're doubly lucky and it's a clear night with the full moon, or close to the full moon, and to see a reflection of the full moon in the still waters of a mountain lake, is very inspiring. And you see that in our watercolours in paintings in Buddhist temples. There's a reason for that, because it's symbolic of how we find deep truth. Not through thinking our way through it. All those thinking that just makes more arguments and counter thoughts and just gets nowhere. But to feel your way. Make the mind still. And then see what's reflected in your mind. Some incredible truths happen that way. So this is actually, sounds really good, but how do we do that? And how do we do that is just learning not to agitate our mind. Ajahn Chah's famous simile just comes up here. Many of you heard this so many times. He'd put his hand up and start waving his hand up and down. This is a leaf on a tree. It only does this, it only moves because a wind is blowing it. If there wasn't any wind, the leaf would be still, because that's its default state. He said, that's just like the human mind. The human mind is still. You would only let it be still. And it's something outside of itself. The wanting. The craving. The wanting to get rid of things. The controlling. That is what agitates our mind. That is what creates the waves of thoughts. So that's one of the reasons why when people say, well, I've just got so many thoughts in my mind, I can't stop thinking. I try, but it doesn't work. Of course it doesn't work. The thoughts are coming because you're disturbing the natural stillness of the mind by doing stuff, trying to control something, trying to get something, trying to want something, even trying to get rid of things. That is the cause for the mind. Creating thoughts. Thoughts are just ripples or waves on the surface of your serenity. And if we keep trying to get rid of those, we just make more waves. So we learn how to let things be. Let things be means whatever's happening now, don't disturb it. Emotionally be at peace with it. Letting go means all the things which disturb the serenity of the present moment. The wanting, the ill will, the controlling. This shouldn't be this way, we should do it some other way. All that stuff which disturbs serenity. That's what we let go of. And what's left, which is huge, we let that be. We don't make it be. Otherwise, that's more control. We let it be. We be the silent observer. Someone who just looks, just feels, just knows, without making any comment or judgment. Because often when we make a comment or judgment, that's when all the thoughts and disturbance and the wanting I wanted to get rid of start. And once you're still, really peaceful. You know, sometimes you wonder why do we even
bother thinking in the first place? Why do we want to move our mind? We just know how, number one, how peaceful, how joyful, how profound it is to have silence outside and stillness inside. And also just how alive you feel when you are peaceful. And also just how much inside happens. It's one of the reasons why a lot of times when people just get in deep meditation afterwards, no questions. The mind needs to think, needs to move, needs to do stuff, to be agitated, to have questions. It's also why all the questions which are ever asked, all the answers which people give, does it ever answer all the questions? Or is it just more questions keep coming up? But when you have some peace, when the mind stops, that's where there's no more questions required. Stillness. You have it here. You have it in your hand. So why do you want to question it? So that is how we become wise. We don't search for answers. We still our mind. And the answers are there. Da da da. Okay. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed that little bit in the beginning. Now, we can, I just have to say it again as usual. Anyone coming for the introduction to meditation class, that's a little bit of my right. This is the advanced, well, those people who think they're advanced, but probably aren't, but anyway. You're good enough. Very good. Okay, so here we go for a nice 45-minute meditation. So sitting down, close your eyes. And forget about whether it's hot or cold in here. It can always be hotter. It can always be cooler. It's never perfect. I often thought that, you know, that you look at the world weather. Some places are really hot, some places are really cold. Surely there must be a place in the middle somewhere where it's just right. And of course you can't find such a place. It keeps on changing. So this is good enough. So to start taking importance away from thoughts and concepts, I start to go to physical feelings, sensations in my body, especially on the surface of my body, starting with my feet. How are my feet? I was saying last night, I can never forget Ajahn Chah telling me and the other Western monks that our feet were stupid. We had dumb feet. And I couldn't understand what he was saying. Was it just a joke? It wasn't a joke. He was saying, most of our attention and what we invested so much energy in finding solutions was in our head. We never actually went to feel what the feet were doing. So, what are your feet doing now? How do they feel? You make this connection between your mind and your feet. You feel them. You know how they feel, the sensations. Once you have that mindfulness, then the kindness kicks in. Can I make you more comfortable, feet? If
even just asking, just like when somebody is sick or you meet an old friend, say, how are you? It's just showing some concern. That by itself improves the relaxation and peace and health and happiness. Even just strange, but knowing that somebody really cares relaxes you. So even your feet, knowing that you are caring for them, that relaxes them. And you go to your lower legs. I just don't tell you to do these things, I'm doing it myself, just going to my lower legs, feeling how they are. And I'm not giving things names, because half of the purpose of this is trusting in that non-verbal, emotional, feeling, whatever you wish to call it, part of the mind, which doesn't have names, but just knows. Get to my knees. I seem to be okay. Thighs. I'm being slow because this is not wasting time. This is building up the strength of my awareness. Building up its ability to feel and just intuitively know when things need to be relaxed or when things need to be tightened up. Intuition, if you like. Insight, if you like. Kindness. And then to my butt. Feel the pressure on the chair or the cushion or the whatever you're sitting on. Feel that. And I was always amazed when I first just playing around, realized I could relax that feeling. It's not all physical pressure. It's sometimes mental reaction. And I just mess around with the way I look at things. Just what I tend to try to say, it's not the pressure disturbs you, it's you who disturb the pressure. In other words, that I can do something. I can relieve the tightness. And so when I start going up my body. And these parts of your body and your torso, they can cause you so much pain and sickness and even cause you death. You just feel as you scan up your body. Just like you ask your feet if they're okay, I ask my bowels if they're okay. And feel them, get to know them, learn how to heal them, relax them. And sometimes it's as simple, sometimes you've got a belt which is too tight, clothes which are just too squashing, posture which is causing some pain. It's amazing just how simple solutions can often create great freedoms from pain and sickness. Even just drinking more water. If you're dehydrated, body will tell you if you care to listen. Just go up my body. Like one of those CT scans, just scanning up, 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 up. I'm scanning with my own mindfulness, awareness, feeling, knowing.
And if anything is a bit strange, tired, painful, aching, just linger. Linger, focus in, and experiment. Experiment to find what is necessary for you to relax. Don't think about it. Again, feel it. Develop that emotional intelligence, even that intuition, which knows how to heal. Healing your own body. And of course you know you're in the right direction when you feel like a tightness, a tension in the body. Relax and ease off. Feels good. And move upwards. Up to your chest, your heart, your lungs. All these organs and muscles. Feel if there's anything needed. Sometimes people say you're not supposed to be able to do these things. It's not confirmed by medical science. But again, I never allow my learning, the theories, the dogma to stand in the way of truth. The truth is this silent feeling of well-being. The ease where you know this is the right path. You're going up to your shoulders. And now, personally, I realize I've got a problem there. My robe is just too tight. So out of kindness, I adjust. And adjusting during the middle of the meditation takes some 20 seconds at most. Disturbs my tranquility, but then I soon get back to where I was before I moved. But this time without any pain. So I'm free now to go deeper. It's worth it. A little, calm, wise move is not disturbing. It's an investment. And I feel my arms, my elbows and hands. Everything nice, peaceful. I've been connecting with my body. Not with the theory, but with the immediate experience. And knowing what to do. Go up to my throat. A little bit of irritation left from some sort of allergies, but not much. Not being afraid to focus in. Having the courage that this works. Going up to my face, feeling the muscles of my face, the tingling. For me, it's a little bit warm, so even the sweat glands I can feel just tingling. The eyes relax and loose. And on the nose and the mouth, no tension, not trying to prove anything, but just letting it be. And after a while I feel my way into this place of bodily relaxation. Oh, you have been recently doing relaxing my brain. Some people can challenge and say, well, there's not such a thing as a sensations where you can know what's happening in the brain. Never let truth be overcome by theory. Your experience, your own feeling, you can imagine your brain. Even visualize it. Imagining it being tired, worn out, low energy. Imagine just feeling it, energy. Relaxing it. Not asking anything from it at all, but giving it a break. Your brain is a servant, a slave, who works for you so hard. Now, you give it time off. This is where I feel my whole body just meditating. And if the meditation is going in the correct direction, it's not just peace in terms of numbness or dullness. You feel delight. Energy, but in a very calm, peaceful, pleasant state. One of the signs of peace is delight and happiness. Peace gives you the freedom to have joy. And to build on that joy. And I indulge there. The joy of a relaxed body. And when it's ready, I just go to my mind, the peaceometer. That's just part of the mind, but an important, vital part of my emotional world. How peaceful am I? And how? What do I need? What is the cause of this needle of the peaceometer to move closer and closer to peace? I also know what agitates it. I can feel it. I'm learning the power of my emotional world of kindness to overcome the world of negativity and fear and control and getting rid of stuff. Kindness is more powerful. It heals, relaxes. You can feel that. After the peaceometer, it always happens to me, just the breath just comes to me, just feel this gentle rhythm of a breath coming into my body and going out. It does it by itself. What I do is just to feel it. It's an automatic process. Just like almost everything else. It's my mind, automatic. The more I let it go, the more I let it be, the more peaceful it is, the healthier, the more energized, and the wiser. And I trust in the wisdom power. Wisdom, I don't mean knowledge power, but wisdom. To feel the way to the next layer of peace, the next increase of mindfulness, to feel the way into the next level of bliss. You can analyze it afterwards when you come out. You can give it names then, but now, leave all those names behind, so you're free. Free to feel. Be peaceful. To know. I'm going to be quiet until close to the end of the meditation.
getting close. The last couple of minutes of meditation. Without giving it a label in words, how do you feel? What emotional response? Greater peace. What disturbed the tranquility? Notice three breaths. The end of the third breath, instead of ringing the gong, do it silently. The end of the third breath, just open your eyes. And smile. And little by little, come out into this world. Okay. Have a couple of questions here, and after those questions, just ask any questions from here inside this hall. So, first of all, from Canada, from Finland, from Austria. I'm having trouble with my meditation. My mind becomes very restless after about 30 minutes of meditation. Could you please advise me? Thanks. Well, I know sometimes just keep your meditation to 30 minutes and then just uncross your legs, open your eyes, and then ask yourself, do you want to have another 15 minutes? And if your mind says, yeah, then close your eyes and carry on meditating again. If it says no, then don't fight the mind. Just follow the intuition of the mind. For some reason, it only wants to do 30 minutes. And the more you push it, the more you try and control it, the more you try and even feel guilty that, oh, I can't do the full 45 minutes. Or you feel, oh, I wish I could sit so quietly and peaceful. The more you sort of think like that, the more you measure, blame, try and control, the more you'll find that the mind will rebel even more. 30 minutes of meditation is wonderful. So, whoa, great. So, you do 30 minutes of meditation, so what's the trouble? So sometimes it's because we want something more. Remember the other old saying? When you want something more, you can't enjoy and appreciate what you have. Leave it at 30 minutes. From Finland,
I get lost to a labyrinth of stupid thoughts when I meditate. How can I get back to sitting and being aware? Sometimes just, again, feeling the sensations in the body. Just because maybe if you're a doctor, you know what those sensations mean. And, you know, you can actually start thinking about them and naming them and seeing their consequences. I tell the story once about just when I was a student, I was really into astronomy, astrophysics, and you learnt a lot of the names of the stars and the constellations, and just, you know, what was a planet and what was a star and what exactly it was. And then I realised I could never, especially coming to Australia, could never look up in the sky and appreciate the stars. I've just always given them names. And so it took a while to deliberately forget and erase that from my mind, so I could look at the stars and I didn't know which one was which. The same I could never learn the names of plants. So I know it's upset some people. I look at the plants, I don't know what's a weed and what's a flower, what's a native and what's indigenous or exotic or whatever. I just look at them and it looks beautiful. Or it looks ugly. Or it doesn't seem to belong here, whatever. Because it means they don't have to have any consequences, any business. I don't need to think. I can enjoy nature. There's plenty of other things I have to think about. I'm not lazy. Just committee meeting tomorrow. There's lots of things to think about. But right now I can just relax and just enjoy this moment. So, labyrinth of stupid thoughts when I meditate. It's a good labyrinth. Labyrinth means there's no way out. You just keep going in there and you just get more and more lost. There's no real purpose to it. But so, the body, nature, there's so much of our world which isn't subdued by thoughts and knowledge. So much of our world which is just unexplored. Feelings in the body. Emotions. So that's why that sometimes you learn very different languages, like learning Thai or learning Pali or Sanskrit. You know, sometimes these words you just can't translate. They don't have the same concept in another culture. And that just shows you just how much of our world is limited. Limited by the language we've managed to absorb. And so much of this is beyond the language. So feel the warmth on your skin, the cold, the ache, the throb of life. The cloud of unknowing is not a cloud, it's a freedom. Why do you have to know? So anyway, when you meditate, how can you get back to sitting and aware? Of course, one of the best ways, when you get back, just you're lost in the labyrinth. Just be there. Be lost. I often tell people, get lost. You know, sometimes it does happen. It happens to you because people take me around when I'm driving here and there, and sometimes I take a wrong turn. And often, I actually like the wrong turns. You go to places you've never been before. You know, off the freeway, just in some little alley of some foreign city. You get lost in there, just why? You can explore. As long as you feel safe. So, you get lost in the labyrinth of stupid thoughts, just be there. Where are you in that labyrinth? You're here. Just be here. And imagine you don't have to find your way out. Imagine you don't need to take notes, you can just be. And then, you're already out. You're aware. You try to find your way out. You get more and more lost. I don't know if this is actually true, there's no such an article, I should have read it, about quicksand. I was taught when I was, I never got seen any quicksand, but if you ever, the myth was, the urban myth, if you get caught in quicksand, don't struggle. Just relax. And then it's just like you float. But the more you trouble, the more you struggle, the more you get stuck in there. And the more you go down, down, down. You just relax until somebody comes by. Then you never die. So in the labyrinth of stupid thoughts, don't try to get out. And then it's not a labyrinth anymore. Anyway, from Austria. I've been meditating for more than 2 years now. Most of the time I get caught up with mundane thoughts. The space between them is really short. Is this normal? Yeah, everything is normal. You know, sometimes people feel, oh, there's something wrong with me. Maybe my brain, you know, was somehow not fully formed when I was young. Maybe I've been badly influenced. Maybe I'm not normal. Whoa. Actually, none of you are normal. Look at me, you know, just how many monks like me are there? I'm totally abnormal. And I cherish and I celebrate my abnormality. Everybody's different. Do you remember that wonderful religious documentary, The Life of Brian? Where they asked Brian to say, give some words of wisdom. He said, you're all different. And they all replied, we are all different. And then somebody put their hand and said, I'm not. So, the need to be normal, so the pressure to be part of everyone else and not to stand out. Why? So anyway, just, you are normal, unfortunately. But you get caught up with mundane thoughts. Afterwards, use your emotional wisdom power. What does mundane thoughts do to you? They just are. All the mundane thoughts which you have in this world, just, where do they ever lead? Smart thoughts? Nah, not really. They just make the mind more complicated. There's a word for that in Buddhism. It's called papancha. Papancha, it means just proliferation. Goes on and 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 on, never coming to an end. So instead, Monday thoughts, just leave them alone. I like the way he said, I get caught up with mundane thoughts. So you can have the mundane thoughts and don't get caught in them. Just separate yourself from the mundane thoughts. Just mundane thoughts. It'll just go. Anyway, what do you do with mundane thoughts on a Saturday? Monday thoughts are on a Monday. I told you, one of us have a normal bug. You have Tuesday thoughts, Wednesday thoughts, and Monday thoughts. Okay, I think I'd better stop. Any questions or complaints from the floor? Anyone has got anything they want to say, ask, comment, complain? Okay, so we can now pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then we can go and do what we need to do, whatever that is. Thank you.